Hello, and welcome to Deliciously Gluten-Free, your guide to tasty foods and eating out again without feeling excluded. And yes, that includes really good bread. This is your resource for practical ways to interact with the world and get your needs met, from delicious recipes to ideas for safe and satisfying ways to attend various social situations, as well as ways to work with friends and loved ones to find win-wins at the dinner table. I'm your host, Mary Pizon, and I am a gluten-free coach and consultant. Now I'd like to introduce you to our guest expert on gluten-free bread baking tips, Christine Brady. Christine lives in sunny Texas in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. She is a wife, mom, and baker, and she loves bread and she loves baking. Christine is the recipe creator, tester, and photographer behind Zest for Baking. Her recipes are designed to make baking easy, consistently delicious, and fun. So chances are, as you're browsing the quick bread recipes or gluten-free yeast bread recipes on her website, she's got another one in the oven. Welcome, Christine. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Yay. So tell us a bit about your story. How'd you get here?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think like a lot of people with gluten-free, you kind of feel like something maybe is not right, you know, with your health, whatever that may be. And that's pretty much how mine started too. I, since about 2013, when I started the site, and I was off and on gluten-free. I would always post gluten-free recipes, do a lot of gluten-free baking, but you know, at home, sometimes I would kind of sneak some pizza or something like that. And that was all good and well for a while. And about 2018, my body just did a complete 180 and said, you can't have this anymore. And I think it's kind of how, like I said, it's how a lot of people come to this lifestyle. It's just because you just something goes weary. So I did what I knew that I should be doing, is completely cut out gluten. And then the following year, I actually cut out dairy too. So I do all gluten and dairy free, because again, I think a lot of people, just like a lot of people, it's not just one thing. It actually leads to several things. And I remember the exact day that I cut out dairy too, because I was sitting there eating a bowl of cereal and I was reading while I'm, you know, reading online. And I just put my spoon down and I said, I've got to cut out dairy. That's exactly what I was reading about, all these symptoms and just issues that people were having. And I said, oh, I felt kind of dumb. You know, I felt like, oh my gosh, why haven't I thought of this before? And so, yeah, here I am. And so then I just, little by little, I have been going back and updating all those old recipes to take dairy out of them. So it's been quite a work in progress, but I would say it's, you know, and it's just how I live now. So,
So let's talk to those people who want really good bread. And I got to say, this is probably the biggest request I ever hear from the gluten-free community. I really miss bread, but it has to be good bread, right? Like, yes. We're so used to thinking that gluten-free has to be a brick or tasteless or sandy textured, you know. So back in the day, you started out just doing recipes for bread. But you've widened your offerings to just about anything you can bake at this point. Tell me a little bit about that decision.
Yeah, it was kind of it just really sprung forth, I guess, is people asking me. You know, I would have people ask me about a brownie recipe, and I thought, well, you know, I bake brownies at home. I just didn't ever publish it, so. I guess it was just a response to what people were asking, you know, and that's, I think some of the best ideas are born. I know for me anyway, just as a blog, you know, publisher, some of those best recipe ideas have been from people saying, hey, I would love to make this. Mm. I would love to do this, you know, sorghum bread, all the things that I think, oh gosh, that sounds amazing. Yeah. Let me try to create something. So
is that where you get a lot of your ideas from, is just because, like, I've noticed, you know, consistently you were just putting bread after bread after bread out. And I was so amazed that you were just able to come up with all of these new ideas. Was most of that from people asking?
It was actually, I would say it's a combination. If I really had to give kind of a percentage of it, I'd say maybe, you know, 60% was just from readers commenting on different things they used to enjoy. And then probably the other 40% is stuff that I had in old recipe books. I have I got it from my mom. We collect all these books, and I'm sure a lot of bakers and cooks do the same thing. You have all these books. And I thought, oh my gosh, I have a whole, you know, collection of recipes kind of at my fingertips. I just have to, you know, figure out how I can make it work for gluten-free. So that would be the other 40% is just grabbing ideas from books that I had.
And tweaking it to.
Yes. Yes.
Brilliant. Yeah. So I've noticed with some of your recipes, like for millet bread, that you blend individual flours for each recipe. And then with others, you use a pre-mixed blend, like for your lemonade scones. Is this an evolution for you, or did you, like, is one better for certain things? Like how did...
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, no, I know what you're asking. I think... Originally, I knew I needed some kind of flour mix. You know, I had seen all these mixes on the market and tried probably every single one that's out there. And they were all fine for kind of the recipes that were on their packages, you know. And I wanted to create something that was, you know, my own, that I had control over what was in it, because at the time, I was also having a lot of readers talk about xanthan gum and being so upsetting to just their digestion and that kind of thing. So a lot of those mixes have not only gums, but just preservatives, because they have to have a shelf life. So I created this mix, and my original thought was, oh, this is going to be perfect for everything. And I'm going to be honest, I thought this was going to be perfect for every single baked good out there. But in reality, it's just not. There are occasions, just like the millet bread, and, you know, where it just requires certain flours. I've got a white bread recipe that's kind of the same thing. It's a white bread without xanthan gum. And so it requires, it's about four different flours in there with the starches. And I know people say, oh, that's just so many flours to buy, but it's so worth it. When you combine all that stuff and you're creating the balance, you know, it makes a big difference. So the flour mix is great for muffins, quick breads, that kind of thing, where it's, you know, even some scones that can definitely work really well. But, you know, when it comes to yeast breads, it's a different ballgame. You probably, you know, different flours definitely play a role. So,
And that's like the whole starch to protein balance.
Exactly. Okay. Yes. Yeah. That's your starch to flours. And then we're looking at, you know, protein and fiber of each of those flours, you know, because your starches are not going to have any. So then you have to balance that with a flour that's going to give you the results you need. You know, something with just white rice flour is just gonna be completely different, you know, if you're just working with white rice flour and starch.
And I imagine the flavor is different too.
Absolutely. Yeah, the flavor and structure, you know, it's just like what you had mentioned, is wanting a really good bread that's just reminiscent of what people used to have. And that's all, it's a structure issue. And that comes down to really how it's prepared, what the flours are, with the balance that you're using, the liquids.
Yeah. So if you're not using a gum, are you using the other thing that I've heard to kind of replicate that gluten is the psyllium husk. Is that what you use, or?
It is. Yeah. So that's a great one. It's, I use it a lot for a lot of things. I also use like flaxseed meal, chia seeds, ground up chia seeds. In one of my recipes, we use whipped egg whites, and that works really well. Yeah.
Oh, as long as you can do the eggs.
Yeah. As long as you can do eggs. Yeah. Yeah. So there's not really a substitute for it. You know, if they're whipped like that, so you can't substitute it, but
I wonder if aquafaba would work for that.
You know, and I've tried it one time and it didn't work out 100%. It worked out. It just wasn't exactly the same. Mm. And I think a reader made it and kind of had some feedback. I said, well, if you don't know what the other one tastes like, it's probably just fine. I would go with it. But I knew what my other one tasted like. So I thought, well, it's a little different. But
oh, did it taste beany?
Exactly. It just had, you know, it didn't have that bread. It's because this white bread, again, it's a really good recipe. And it's reminiscent of gluten bread. And so that's what I was biting into expecting. And it was just... like a bean. So, but they loved it. I mean, it worked for what they needed. So,
and you know, that's the important part, is just figuring out what we can make work, you know.
Exactly. Yes.
And that's the thing, is like, I see some people just attack this from it's gluten-free and that's the only thing that I ever need to worry about. And then there's other people who are like, gluten is just one aspect of many in their diet that they've had to eliminate. And you know, from the eggs or the soy or the nuts or whatever.
Absolutely.
So for recipes that have individual flours, how do you go about determining the unique blend for each one? Like, do you have a system, or?
You know, so I think it kind of, I have kind of my go-to flours that I know just from experience that will produce a good bread structure that I'm looking for. Okay. So I kind of have those in mind. Millet, for example, millet produces really, really good bread. You wouldn't think, it kind of sounds kind of hokey. Oh, you know, it's a little on the pricier side. Yeah. So I buy it in bulk. So that helps, you know, anything that you're making, you know, if you're living a gluten-free lifestyle and you like to bake, inevitably you're going to be buying a lot of flour. So I always recommend buying in bulk, because that definitely helps with the cost. So, but anyway, you know, back to millet. Yeah, it's, I know if I work with that, it's going to work out really well. And so usually I try to keep a certain balance between the starch, because starch is really important in my baking. You'll notice I do use a lot of starch. I don't, it works really well for structure. So I keep a balance. Sometimes it's 50-50. Sometimes it's, you know, 60-40. Of flour to starch. Okay. Mm. Again, sometimes it's 50-50 flour starch. And that's usually how I determine what I'm going to do. But and I use, like I said, it's, I'll use white rice flour or brown rice flour as kind of a filler sometimes. You know, you can buy those flours are typically lower of all the flours. Your starches are going to be pretty affordable. The white rice and brown rice flours are going to be pretty affordable too. And then from there, the cost just kind of goes up with what you're getting. But those are pretty good. Oat flour is good too. You can buy, if you can tolerate oats, you can get just certified gluten-free oats, like from Bob's Red Mill, and then just ground them. I just throw them in my food processor and ground them here at home. And that works really well too. It's got a good fiber protein content. So that's a good one to use. But that's pretty much my method. I wish I had a better
That's great
explanation for it. But yeah,
Do you have recipes that don't use rice? I know that in the gluten-free community, there's concern rising about the mercury that's in rice. Do you have rice-free recipes?
Oh gosh, yes. I don't use a whole lot of it, especially in yeast baking and yeast breads. Of course it's in my flour mix, but, for my typical yeast breads, I don't usually use it. Where I do use a lot of rice flour is in muffins and quick breads. But again, you know, rice flour is also, it's an easy one to substitute. I mean, it's pretty versatile. It's low. Both of them are real low on the protein and fiber content. So they're not a real substantial flour anyway,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you could definitely substitute normally just with something like sorghum would be a pretty good spot for it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that haven't seen a whole lot of flags raised for sorghum at this point. So that would be good.
I know. Yeah. And that's what I tell people. If you've got something, you know, that doesn't agree for some, rice, there's always an alternative. I mean, we mm-hmm. just have to get creative and figure out what it is. So.
And there's a lot of getting creative in this community.
Yes. That's what keeps our jobs fun, huh?
Oh, absolutely. So, okay. Baker to baker. Why do you think gluten-free bread gets gummy in the center?
Good question. So it really has to do with the structure. Okay. And I get asked this all the time, and I really feel for people because they will, the more information I get, the better. I mean, sometimes I have readers that tell me exactly what they did and all of this, but it really comes down to a structure issue. It can be with the flours that you're using. And again, I'll have to look and see what flours they've used to the starch. But then if that kind of checks out, if I can look and go, oh, okay, well, I don't think it was a flour and starch issue. It could be a liquid. You know, if there's too much liquid in the recipe, it may rise very nicely and then collapse. Mm. And then once it's in the oven baking and you kind of, it rises really nice and then you bake it and it still looks nice. And sometimes even when you're baking it, it's collapsing as it's baking. And then they take it out, let it cool, cut it, and it's that gummy, you know, texture. And that is a liquid. Typically, that's a liquid issue. There's just too much liquid to the flours and starches. So that has to be adjusted. And then another reason is just it possibly didn't bake in the right size pan. Maybe it just needs to be in a smaller pan.
Okay.
And so that it can rise up a little better and then it will bake, and then cooling too. That's another culprit, I guess I would call it, is if, you know, it's so tempting to just slice into that warm bread.
It smells so good.
Yes. Oh, waiting is the hardest part. And
yes.
But you have to wait. And sometimes it's hours, you know, to wait for it to cool and then slice it, because it's still, you know, you think about all that starch that's in that bread, it has to come together. And, you know, there's kind of that third period after it bakes in the oven where that cooling is just as important almost, where it has to have that time once you take it out of the pan, let it sit there on that wire rack and tempt everybody. But, you know, it has to cool. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of it too, is if it's just not cooled properly, then once you cut, it's going to have that gummy and it's going to kind of push, it'll kind of push the inside down. And so that's kind of get gummy. So that's where I would start. Yeah.
So balancing your starches and making sure you don't have too much,
mm-hmm.
and then
balancing the liquid,
mm-hmm. yeah. and then letting that sucker cool.
Yes.
Oh, that's the hard part. That really is.
I know. Nobody wants to hear that, but you really do. It's, yeah.
And it's different for the gluten-free bread, isn't it? Like, you can slice into a wheat-full bread and it's not quite as much of an issue.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember I used to just slice into that when it was still steaming.
You know,
you just can't, it will crush. Even if you use the best, and oh, I always recommend use a really, really sharp bread knife to slice. So even if you've got the sharpest bread knife and you're slicing it, it'll crush that inside and that will make it gummy too. So it's just,
there it is.
It's not worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any other baking tips or troubleshooting that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess my big tip that I always kind of make sure that everyone is kind of keeping in the back of their mind. It's never a super fun thing to do because we're just not used to it, but is weighing ingredients.
Oh, yes.
Ingredients with a digital scale is very, very important. digital scales are about $10 on Amazon. So, but it is one of the best investments you'll make in your baking. So just make sure to weigh. I'm even converting sugars, brown and white sugars, in weight, because it's really, really important. It's an important thing for structure, avoiding all those things we just mentioned that people don't like, the gumminess. It's all of that, you know, it avoids all of that. So that would
right, because that way you get the exact same amount each time.
Exactly.
Right.
You know exactly what that recipe creator is intending on you having, you know, because it's really crazy. I actually went over this in my baking masterclass, that you can have a cup of flour in one cup measurement and have another cup measurement that looks the same. It says one cup, and they're even completely different in weight. I've had it be off 10, 15 grams.
Oh, wow. And that, and there's your gumminess because there's too much starch, or the proportions are off.
Oh yeah. Or it's dry, because that throws it off. Yeah,
oh, wow.
Exactly. So it's really important. It's, you know, like I said, it's one of the best investments you'll make. You're making.
So what's next for you? You've got this beautiful website, all of these wonderful recipes. What's on the horizon? What's coming
yeah.
up?
Yeah. Oh, well, so by the end of this year, by the holidays, I am going to have out a hardcover book, like a holiday baking cookbook.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, with some just reader favorite recipes, some recipes that I've not released on the blog yet. So stay tuned for that, because that's a big project.
I understand that, like, a lot of times bakers will save their best ones for the cookbook. Is that?
Yep, exactly. You're right.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's part of the reason why I'm always happy to buy a cookbook, is like, I know that these are tested and these are like the creme de la creme. These are the ones that can almost be like signatures.
Exactly. Yes. Well, you know, we have to keep something. I mean, it's a cookbooks, of course, as you know, it's just, there's a lot of heart and love and labor that goes into it. So,
absolutely.
I've definitely got some good ones in store for the holidays for that. So,
oh, that's so exciting. I can't wait.
Yeah, thank you.
So if you were to leave listeners with one single action for today, what would it be?
Oh, well, I would love for you to come and say hi over on my website. I guess that would be wonderful. I would love to meet anybody and hear what their journey is. I do have a little e-cookbook for 15 gluten-free bread recipes on the website. So that would be definitely something to check out.
Fabulous. And that's free for anybody?
It is free. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's marvelous. Thank you so much.
Oh,
I'll be sure to include a link when I post this.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
Yes. So, okay, Christine, thank you so much for sharing with us today. It's been an absolute joy to have you with us. Do you have any final thoughts for us, or?
Oh, just keep on baking, keep trying, keep experimenting.
You never know when you're going to find your favorite thing.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. That is so true.
Well, thank you so much. And we will see you around on your website, zestforbaking.com.
Thank you.